Turn with me to the Song of Solomon. If you have a companion Bible, it's on page 922. And we're going to get involved again with the mind of God concerning David and Solomon, and we're going to deal with the Song of Solomon in study two. This is the second study. Last week we had study one, and we dealt with the last prayer that David made for his son Solomon. And so today we're getting involved with the Song of Solomon. And today's date is 1/24/2018. And I'm going to kind of introduce this, and it's going to take a little bit to do so, because before we get started in the study itself, there is a few things that we need to look at and a few things that we need to see. And I've just written a few of them down. And it goes like this. We in this day and age quite often do not fully understand the ways and the customs of our Hebrew counterparts. Both we and they have been chosen by God and given privileges and opportunities concerning hope and calling within His plan and purpose for time's future. This study gives us a look back into history, a short glimpse back into history. And it comes from the written scrolls called Megillah, and it has an order to be read in the festivals of the Jews. And there was five scrolls that dealt with this. And the Song of Solomon that we're going to take up was read at the feast of the Passover. And it was done in our March time, as far as the date goes, in March. March the 9th, I believe. And that was the first one, and Ruth is read at Pentecost. So when they opened these festivals up, they read these poems or these songs or the books that was to be read and brought forth. Ruth is read at Pentecost, and then Lamentations was on the 9th of Ab, or AB, and this is our July the 9th. Ecclesiastes was the Feast of Tabernacles, and that was done in September. And Esther was at the Feast of Purim, or the Lots. And whenever they drew lots, that was in February, in the middle of February, our calendar time. And so that's the five things that are read every year, and they were read for a reason. And the reason is the reasons are quite plain, and and of course the feast of Solomon was read at the feast of the Passovers, and you know the Passover was instituted before the children of Israel came out of Egypt. And they had a hard time coming out of Egypt. And it cost a lot of people in Egypt, the firstborn of not only people, but of flocks and of their herds and flocks too. So that gives you kind of a little clue as to the reason this is read at that time. And we're now looking at the first one, which is called the Song of Songs, meaning the most beautiful or the most excellent song. A song of Passover with an incentive to be an overcomer. And it means also to stand fast in loyalty and love in the face of fierce temptations and severe trials. And it deals in our earthly relationship to both Christ and to those that we have earthly relationships also in this day and age. And this makes to them that God's promises are true and real to those who are overcomers, as expressed in Revelation, Hebrews, and 1 Peter. And then we have a list also that deals with the mystery epistles, and five or six of them also. So there's a reason for, you know, for all this to be done. And then there is, when you get to looking at this, there is a number of speakers that speak in this Song of Solomon, and they are either spoken to or they do the speaking themselves. And it kind of goes back and forth like the book of Revelation does, where you have scenes on earth and scenes in heaven. But here, it's different ones that makes up all this, and we'll just go through them. Because in the Song of Solomon, on the first page in the notes there, down where verse 9 ends, across from that, it says the numbers of speakers forbids all the interpretations, which depends on there being only two. There are seven in all, and they can be easily distinguished by the structure. And number one is the Shulamite. It's the young lady in question here in this song. And then it deals also with the daughters of Jerusalem. And that's Solomon's group that he has grouped together, that he has as women in his entourage. Okay? That's two. And then you have Solomon, which is three. And then you have the shepherd lover of the Shulamite, because this woman has fell in love with the shepherd. And then Solomon, we'll talk about this in a minute, but Solomon comes and gets her and carries her to his place and tempts her into becoming a queen of his. And so this is the whole deal in a nutshell, if you will, that this is where the temptations and the things comes in that she don't really want to have anything to do with. And in the end, I'll give you a little bit of the ending of the story. In the end, she goes back to her shepherd guy. So, you got the shepherd lover of the Shulamite, and then you got the brothers of the Shulamite, and then you got the companions of the shepherd. He's got a group of people that he's, you know, raising his flocks and things with, that they're kind of like Job's friends. They get involved a little bit in it. And then you got also the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Now, I've kind of muddied the waters, I know already, but I want to turn back to the notes on the structure of the Song of Solomon and read what Dr. Ginsberg wrote in 1857, it said, to which reference have been added in order to connect the threads of the events. So, not only is the book written, and it goes from one person to the other person, so Dr. Ginsberg gave us a little picture there, and I'm going to read some of this, because Ginsberg could say it much better than I can. There was a family living in Shulam, consisting of a widowed mother, several sons, and one daughter, who maintained themselves by farming and pasturage. The brothers were particularly fond of their sister and took her under their special care, promising that her prudence and virtue should be greatly rewarded by them. Now, you got to go back about the end of the story to find all this. But let's read on. In the course of time, while tending the flock and according to the customs of the shepherds, resorting at noon beneath a tree for shelter against the meridian sun, she met with a graceful shepherd youth to whom afterwards became espoused. Now, this is the first part of the story. So, you see, it don't run in particular order. We're going to get the gist of the whole thing, and then we're going to go back and we're going to read about the parts, the separate parts. Okay. So, this, they were under these trees resting and letting their stock rest. And evidently, she went down to see her brothers, and she fell in love with this guy, with a shepherd. Okay, one morning in the spring, this youth invited her to accompany him to the field, but the brothers overheard the invitation, and anxious for reputation of their sister, they sent her in order to prevent her meeting. They sent her to take care of their vineyards. So rather than letting her go down and cavort with the guys down in the pasture, they sent her to the vineyard. They said, well, you're too good for this. We're going to allow you to work in the vineyards. And she did. The damsel, however, consoled her beloved and herself with the assurance that, though separated, wholly indissoluble ties sustained between them over which her brothers had no control. She requested him to meet her in the evening, and as he did not come, she feared that an accident had befallen him on the way and went in search of him and found him. The evening now was the only time in which they could enjoy each other's company, as during the day the damsel was occupied in the vineyards. On one occasion, when entering a garden, she accidentally came into the presence of King Solomon, who happened to be on a summer visit in the neighborhood. Struck with the beauty of the damsel, the king conducted her into his royal tent, and there, assisted by his court ladies, endeavored with alluring flatterings and promises to gain her affection, but without effect. Released from the king's presence, the damsel soon sought an interview with her beloved shepherd. The king, however, took her with him to his capital, a great pomp in the hope of dazzling her with his splendor. But neither did this prevail, for while even there, she told her beloved shepherd who had followed her into the capital and obtained an interview with her that she was anxious to quit the scouty scene and go for her own home. The shepherd, hearing this, praised her constancy and such a manifestation of their mutual attachment took place that several of the court ladies were greatly affected by it. The king, still determined, if possible, to win her affections, watched for another favorable opportunity, and with flattering and allurement, surpassed all that he had used before, trying to obtain his purpose. He promised to elevate her to the highest rank, and to raise her above all his concubines and queens, if she would comply with his wishes. But faithful to her espousal, she refused all overtures on the plea that affections were pledged to another. The king convinced her at last that he could not possibly prevail, was obliged to dismiss her, and the shepherdess in the company with her beloved shepherd returned to his native place. On their way home, they visited the tree under which they first met, and there renewed their vows of fidelity to each other. On her arrival in safety at her home, her brothers, according to their promise, rewarded her greatly for her virtuous conduct. Boy. And so that is the gist of what we're going to read about. But now there's little things that we need to see and understand. And so we're going to read hopefully the first 11 verses here in the Song of Solomon, go if we have time. And learn a few things that we may not have known before. Now, she is from the lot that Benjamin got as he drew out his lot for his land. But now she's a dark lady. She's not pure white girl. And so, this makes the story a little better, in a sense. Okay. Verse 1. Verse 1 says the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. So, there is a note there at the bottom of the structure of the book of the Song of Solomon's. And it lists this, and we'll not go into all of this, but it talks about the question of authorship, therefore does not of necessity arise and need not to be discussed, but the words in the Hebrew says that is concerning Solomon, that it's not something that Solomon wrote. It's kind of like the deal with the Psalms, where it says for the chief musician. So if you're going to have a song, if it needs to be sung, I guess there needs to be a musician that will put sound with the words that goes with a song there. At the Passover, they may have sung it. They may have not. I have no idea. But the very first verse says, the Song of Songs, which is Solomon's. And so it concerns Solomon. It may not be that he wrote. Don't have no clue to that, but it really doesn't matter. In the terms of being in Holy Writ, because the story was preserved and it was among the scrolls and it was said to be used at every Passover. From the time of Solomon on. Okay? And then, when we get involved in verse 2, because verse 1 is kind of self-explanatory, but when we get into verse 2, you got the Shulamite woman now. Here is the speaker. Verses 2, 3, and 4, she is the speaker. And she is talking to her betrothed. She is talking to the person that she loves here in 2, 3, and 4. And it says this, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is better than wine. And she is saying, oh for kisses with the kisses of his mouth, for thy love is your endearments are, or I see your need for me. She says, I can see and understand your need for me, and that is better than yaying. It's better than the wine. I mean, this is good wine if you're talking about it. This is not fermented. I mean, it's not sweet wine. It's wine that's alcohol content is in. So she said, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. That's real kisses. And it says, because she knows that his love to her is better than wine that could be given to her. And she's worked in the vineyard, so she ought to know what wine is in verse 2.
And that's what it's talking about.
Yeah. And then you get to verse 3. She says, because of the savor of thy good ointment, thy name is as ointment poured forth. Therefore do the virgins love thee. Well, it says, because of the savor, and savor there is 7381 in the Strong's, and it is a sweet smell. So, according to those in the know, that a lot of times people are attracted to each other by their smell. Without even saying anything sometimes. And that's an old saying that's still true today, evidently, in that situation. So he says, is the smell of thy good or thy sweet ointment? Thy name or your personal name. And it goes back to Psalms 21 where it talks about a defending name. And I don't know what the name is, but it says it's as an ointment poured forth. And that is 80, the ointment is 8081 in the Strong's, and it is a perfumed liquid from an olive derivative, showing richness and this is the reason the rest of this verse is in there. Because he is using an ointment that is poured forth upon himself that gives him this wonderful smell. And it designates to these ladies that he might meet that he has worthiness within him. that he, you know, has not used just some old scent somewhere, but he is using a scent that is evidently goes along with those that have wealth. Okay? In that sense.
Putting out the vibe.
Yeah, okay. And it says, therefore, or so then, do the virgins or the damsels love thee, or are drawn to thee. And I guess she figures if she was, then others could be too. But they kind of fail for each other. So you see the plot thickening a little bit here. And so we get down to 4. And it says, draw me, we will run after thee. The king hath brought me into his chambers. We will be glad and rejoice in thee. We will remember thy love more than wine. The upright love thee. So you're getting a kind of a prelude to this whole story in just a few verses here. So in verse 4 says, draw me, or let us flee together. He said, we will run after thee. Basically, elope. Says, if you're going to run, I'm going to run after you. I will follow your lead. And it also says this, the king hath brought me into his chambers, or his tent. And he's brought her there into where he's there on a visit in his living quarters. He's brought her in there for enticement. He's going to try to entice her with his wealth and his knowledge and wisdom and all these things, because he's wanting to bribe her into becoming one of his queens. Matter of fact, top queen. And he says, we will be glad and rejoice in thee, my shepherd. We will remember and praise thy love, the shepherd's love. And the shepherd's love more than wine or the yayin. And he says, the upright love thee. So he's talking about these general friends that the shepherds have here. The general friends, she says, find you worthy. So she's looking at him not only as him, but she's looking at him as who he abides with. My grandmother used to say, you're known by the people you keep around you. And I don't think that's changed any down through the ages. None. Evidently not. And Grandma was a smart lady, and she taught me a lot. But this is one thing. She said, you'll be known by the people you associate with and how they conduct themselves. So this lady has already made that distinction with her lover friend. She says, man, he's worthy. He's better than any fine wine that I could drink. I'm really going for him. So that's the 4 verses there that it kind of deals with their love to a certain extent. And then she goes talking about herself a little bit here. In verse 5, she says, I am black but comely. O ye daughters of Jerusalem, as the tent of Kedar, and as the curtains of Solomon. And I looked at this and I said, wait a minute, what is she trying to tell me? What am I to understand about this here? I am black, 78:38 in the Strong's, and it means swarthy or deep brown. And part of this deep brown is from the sun, dusky. She calls it, they call it dusky in the Strong's because she's been working in the vineyards. I don't know for how many years, but she's went out there and hasn't taken care of herself, and she works during the noontime when they're piled up under the trees and letting the animals rest because of the hot sun in the middle of the day. But she's out there, been out there working. And she says, I'm black. And I've often wondered if a black person, if the sun affected them like it does fair-skinned people. And I guess to some extent it does. I've never really asked anybody that was a friend of mine that I could confide in. Well, the sun ever bother you? You know, I just never have. So she says, but comely. And comely is the number 5,000 in the Strong's. And it's nave. And it means suitable or beautiful. So this lady had a dark complexion, a real deep brownish complexion that really stood out to Solomon. He was blown away by it in want of other words. That's my words. He was blown away by this. And so she says, I am brown, I am black, but comely, O ye daughters of Jerusalem. And the daughters of Jerusalem were the court ladies that Solomon had with him. In his entourage and in his tent, he traveled with his lady friends, evidently. And they were called the daughter, O ye daughters of Jerusalem. And they were the ladies of Solomon's court. And they were there for his bidding, whatever he needed done. And it was part of their job to try to persuade her to join in their group. And so, she said that she was black, deep brown or dusky, but comely. It was suitable or beautiful, very beautiful. And but she said she was black as the tents of Kedar. And evidently those people from that area, all of their tents were black or real, real dark. I guess it looked like in the summertime they would make them very hot, but it would shield them from the sun, no doubt. It says that in the notes that they were all black and very dark. And it also says, as the curtains of Solomon's. And the curtains in Solomon's tent were known as comely. It means that they were really suitable and really beautiful. And of course, you know, Solomon had to, he lived in evidently a pretty extravagant manner. And so, what can you say about that? But his curtains were also dark to a point where he had privacy. And so she goes on here. So this is another little tidbit that got thrown into the story here that we would not have known just by reading the good doctor's dissertation that we started out with. Verse 6. She says, look not upon me because I am black, It says, because the Son hath looked upon me. My mother's children were very angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyards. But mine own vineyard have I not kept. See, so she says, you know, I got out there and worked in the vineyard, but I didn't pay a lot of attention to how I was dressed, and I got darker and darker. Okay, she said, look not upon me, or regard me not for my skin tone, or my skin color. And look not down on me because I am black or swarthy. Because the sun have looked upon me and given me darker skin. My mother's children, which are my brothers, were angry with me because I showed my shepherd admiration that they hadn't received. They, the brothers, made me the keeper of the vineyards. In sunshine I wrought. But mine own vineyard have I not kept. I did not take care of my body or my looks while I was working outside. Does that verse change that way make sense to you as to what took place? As to what happened. To me, it just flowed right out to me. Mm-hmm. And so here I am trying to explain to you between the lines what I'm reading in the song, the psalm. And I do that not to change the word of God, but to enhance the storyline that we're doing here, because I want you to understand when we go through these 8 chapters, I want you to understand the reasoning behind this, because we're going to look at some of those scriptures in the mystery truth that deals with this, because that storyline still follows this same song here, because we're always tempted and we're always under pressure. And we always look at the beautiful things, but we're told not to covet them. And all this, there's a reason behind all this. Verse 7, and I'm maybe not going to even get through the first 11. Now, she turns back to her shepherd in this story. And ask him about his shade at noon. And their noontime deals where they got these animals out in the pasture. So she says, you know, I didn't take care of myself in the sun. What about you? That's basically what she's saying. Because this guy is her love. Now, she has really fallen for this dude. And she's wanting to know about him. And interested in what they do. Look at verse 7. It says, tell me, O thou, whom my soul loveth. Well, there you go. When thou feedest, where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon, for why should I be as one that turneth aside by the flocks of thy companion? So again, she is asking her shepherd, says, tell me, O thou, whom my soul or my nephesh loveth, where do you eat and rest at noontime? Where thou feedest and where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon, to lie down in the shade as you do? For why should I, and she said, ask this, in essence, for why should I be the one that turneth aside to to stray or wander away with Solomon, by, to, or among the flock of thy companions. Why should I go away with Solomon and leave you with your people? That was her question. And then verse 8 says this. And then she gets an answer from the ladies of Solomon's court here in verse 8. If thou know not, O thou fairest among women, go thy way forth by the footsteps of the flock and feed thy kids beside the shepherd's tent. So the lady said, well, if you're not happy here, great lady, why are you still here? If thou know not, if you don't know why you were asked by Solomon to be here, the fairest among women, the Lady Shulamite, it says, go thy way. For by the footsteps of the trail of the flock, if you're going to follow the trail of the flock and feed thy kids, and to feed the kids is 14:23 in the Strong's, and it means the young of the flock, whether it be goats or lambs. They're called kids. Okay, this is the word kid there. And feed thy kids, or the young of the flock, beside or alongside the shepherd's tents. If you're gonna have a shepherd for a husband, and you're probably going to wind up feeding his babies beside the tent that you're going to live in at that shade, wherever that shade is, and put up. So you might as well get on the business. You might as well get up and go, you know. But it wasn't quite that easy. And in verse 9 it says this, And this is 9 through 11 is Solomon's words. See, so it's not real easy to keep up with a story unless you get kind of rooted and grounded in the way these scenes move around. And I hope I haven't lost anybody. But verse 9 is Solomon's word to the Shulamite woman now. And he ain't giving up real easy. He's smitten too. And Solomon says, I have compared thee, O my love, to a company of horses in Pharaoh's chariot. Now, isn't that something to say to your love? You know, think about it. This is the man with the wisdom of God, and it doesn't sound like he's got a lot of tact that he's dealing, is he? So let's talk about that a minute. He says, I have compared thee, or you, O my love, or my beloved friend, to a company or a team of mare horses in Pharaoh's chariot. And that is arrayed in finery. If Pharaoh goes out with his chariots, these horses are dressed, decked out to the hilt. And so he says, you know, when I look at you, I'm comparing you to something that's really decked out, really ready to go. And although, you know, she's not really dressed up, but he also says in verse 10, thy cheeks are comely with rows of jewels, thy neck with chains of gold. So here's your gold word, Ronnie, again, in the Song of Solomon. So it says, thy cheeks are comely, and that means beautiful. And very, very well-defined, I guess, with rows of jewels or these earthly adornments that they put on these animals. Thy neck with chains, and in her deal, he was wanting to put necklaces of gold upon her like they do these horses around their necks. They put chains of gold on them.
Decorate her up.
But here he's wanting to compare her to this chariot thing business here, and he's bringing it right down the line. And let's look at 11, and we'll stop for the night because we have gotten just about all of our time back. And it says, this is Solomon still applying his talk to her. It says, we will make thee borders of gold with studs of silver. It said, we'll make you bead rows of gold on this necklace that he's dreaming up for. And it says, with studs, which are separators of these beads of gold. These studs are separators, and you know, you've seen women wearing these necklaces with, it looks like studs or teeth or something, and all this that's arrayed in such a manner as to make it look very beautiful. And that's what he's telling her, that he could see her being in this situation. Yes, man, you remind me of one of Pharaoh's chariots all decked out. I'm going to deck you out in this. But this is not what she wants. And so the story goes on. We just started in the story, but we'll stop here because we've run about 45 to 50 minutes now, so. We'll go ahead and stop. We'll pick it up there and go on the next time. But I think I haven't read all of it, but I believe it goes through 8 chapters. So, see, even though she's dark-skinned, she is evidently more beautiful than anything at this point that Solomon has in his entourage. She is somebody that he just feels like he's got to have. So this is not the only time that he entices her. But see, you get a little bit of the whole story basically in the first few verses. But it goes on and on. See, so there's a reason behind all this, because you know, if you're an overcomer, you've got to overcome all these things in this life that you have on the earth. You need to be an overcomer and to come out on the other end undiluted. And this is what this young lady did. And I think her brothers thought that she was not going to make it, but you know, a lot of times we have our siblings that we look at and say, I don't know where you're ever going to mount anything. You know? But when the true test comes, that's when the rubber meets the road in Southern language. And so things work out according to the will of God. And these two people, they had they had all these problems to deal with. And then when he moves her to town, or moves her into Jerusalem where his palace is, the shepherd boy, he follows her right there. He don't give up on her either. So it kind of reminds me of a song that they wrote about this girl and boy that wanted to marry and their parents didn't like either one of their choices. And the deal was, well, I'll see you when my chores are through and I'm gonna meet you. I'm gonna be with you. So whatever comes, don't give up on me and I'm gonna be there. And so the old man was reading this same note that to his grandson that his wife, which was the grandson's grandmother, had written to him way back. And so that truly reminds me of the Song of Solomon here. So I guess in all ages and down through all times we have these things, get in front of us that we have to either deal with, accept, or sidestep. And I think this is the reason that this song was written and that it was put in Holy Writ for people to understand that look at what Christ went through and look at what he had to partake of to give us a chance to forgive us of these things that come up in our life that we are not fully able to take care of on our own, but that the Holy Spirit helps us to do that. Thank you again, and we'll either meet at Ronnie's next week or we'll do something, but we're not going to go through this again. We'll get us some equipment or something that'll work. Thank you for putting that with us and holding the space and giving us the opportunity. And I hope you got a little something out of this. And to do something like this, it takes a little groundwork to get it out that we can understand it. And then once we get the groundwork down, then I think we'll get a blessing out of these studies. It won't take long. So thank you very much, and turn it back over to Ronnie.